Oppan Gangnam Style. Gangnam Style.
If you're old enough to be on the internet in 2012, there's no way you can't recognize this beat. Becoming the first video on YouTube to hit 1 billion views, it became the year's meme, and the first that most people heard of K-pop. Probably what they thought was going to be the last of it as well. When Psy came out with Gangnam Style, K-pop was a niche genre trying to get attention from other East Asian countries. 7 years later, it's blown up to be a $5 billion industry, whose artists routinely get nominated for Western awards, and whose concerts around the world get sold out within minutes. So, what the hell happened? Hello and welcome to this week's episode of Around the World in 90 Songs, where I, your host AVK, take you through different cultures and time periods to see if you dare widen your musical horizons further than what's on your Spotify playlist. Today, we're diving into the controversial world of K-pop and looking at how a country's passing youth trend came to ingrate itself in the global music industry, and at what cost. Slave contracts, suicides, and prostitution rings are all coming right up, but first, let's take a look back. When you think of generation-defining music of the 90s, you're probably going to be imagining the Backstreet Boys singing about their heartaches, or Kurt Cobain crooning about teen spirit. But in order for you to understand the impact of K-pop on music today, I'm going to have to introduce you to a generation-defining song that you've probably never even heard of. This is Seo Taeji and Boys' musical debut on the South Korean music competition show in 1992. In between the electro beats and rapping, the judges weren't impressed. Up until the late 80s, all of Korean media was promoted and commissioned by the military regime of General Chun Doo-hwan. The hits of the time were about love for the country that were sang by primped up, squeaky clean celebrities. So, it's not much of a surprise that the jury panel weren't blown away by Seo's baggy jeans and breakdancing. However, there was an audience behind them, one that yearned for something new. So, although the judges gave the song the lowest score of the evening, Nan Dareyo immediately became the number one hit for record-breaking 17 weeks straight. So Taeji and Boys brought in aspects of Western culture and made them resonate with Korean youth. They broke the mold of optimistic songs when they criticized Korea's grueling education system and the societal pressures to fit within the culture. They shaped the trends and ideas of the time to such a point that Seo Taeji became known as the president of culture. By the time the group disbanded, three companies had emerged to try to copy what Seo Taeji and Boys did in the entertainment industry. These are what are now known as the Big Three: SM, JYP, and YG. In 1987, when the Asian financial crisis hit Korea, the government realized that they had a unique cultural export, and so they started helping to finance and promote the industry as well, with the Big Three taking advantage of the opportunity. And this is what brings us to the K-pop that you know of today. So really, what is K-pop? You often wouldn't describe the genres within it as pop, and quite often, the songs and artists aren't even Korean. So, it's more of a concept if anything. Back in the 90s, the big three companies made a formula for bands, or idol groups, as they're called.
So these 12, 13, 14-year-olds are cherry-picked from auditions and street castings to go into this life of training, and they're cherry-picked to train for a minimum of 2 years for these companies.
After being scouted and trained for years, the trainees get assembled into carefully coordinated groups. K-pop groups typically have quite a few roles in them. A leader does most of the talking at award ceremonies, the main dancer has their solos and music videos. The visual is normally the one in close-ups for album promos, and the youngest member of each group always has a special title of maknae and the cute little image to back it up. And talking about group coordination, it's not rare to have bands that are a little bigger than the ones you'll see here in the West. Girls' Generation has 8 members, EXO had 12 at some point, and NCT has 18 and counting. Not only are the group members varied, with groups often featuring Thai, Chinese, and Japanese idols, but the music styles they play with are as well. You've got the bubblegum pop, the dark concepts, the reggae influence, the hip hop. I'm not pop, I'm not rock, I'm not funk, I'm not R&B or hip hop. I just don't want she don't more than an echo jump with a tired. Because K-pop's such a new genre, there's no set formula that any group has to follow. One single group can have a comeback with a cute poppy concept in February, then release the more soulful album in July, and then finish off the year with the dark and sexy image in November. Even within the songs themselves, you'll find a lot of experimentation with mashups of different genres and beats. For example, Girls' Generation, I've Got a Boy, has 7 different melodies and genres mixed in within it. The effort and money put into the industry is shocking. But the only reason this cycle continues is because people seem to enjoy it.
It's a lot of experimental music in a sense, whereas like you have like that, like, what is it, 1-4-1-3 or something, like chord transition that's in like almost every Western pop song. K-pop plays a lot around a lot more with different sounds and tones and like music styles. My first exposure to K-pop was, I think, the YouTube Music Awards 2013. When Girls' Generation won the Music Video of the Year award, and I was just hella shook at the time. I had no idea what K-pop was at the time, and I was like wholeheartedly rooting for like Rihanna or something. And then I remember like Tiffany, one of the members, going up and being like, "Yeah, thank you," and I had no idea what was happening. So naturally, I checked out song, and the song was "I Got a Boy." And if you've ever heard "I Got a Boy," it's the setup of it is very untraditionally traditional music, because it's like 5 different genres mashed up in one. So I was like, what is this? This is strange, never again. Then, that was 2013, I got into K-pop about 2 years later, properly, with a BuzzFeed video, actually. It was like, the Try Guys, Try K-pop. I really liked Crazy by 4Minute, and Call Me Baby by EXO. And I listened to those 2 top songs, you know, the traditional like, oh, I just want to learn their names, and then you're down the rabbit hole.
Look, K-pop can be a great way to get a boost of optimism, or fantasize a little about the picture-perfect idols that make it seem like they're gonna be your future loves. But there's always gonna be trouble in paradise. So let's get to the dark part of K-pop that I promised to tell you about at the beginning of the show. Sex, suicide, and slavery. Now, it's important to keep in mind that although Seo-taeji did somewhat shift the cultural norms in South Korea, the country is still very much conservative. Those in the public eye have to keep a very G-rated image. Although being seen with an occasional bottle of soju won't get you blacklisted, dating even in your late 20s as an idol can get you kicked out of your company. There's strict rules you have to follow to maintain a pure and healthy image, with weekly weight and drug tests. A nasty rumor or story can ruin your chances of debuting as a trainee, and although homoeroticism is aggressively marketed by the entertainment companies, actually coming out would result in a huge amount of homophobic backlash. With so many limits on what you can do, a lot of dark stuff is kept on low. Up until it isn't. Take EXO, the group I mentioned that used to have 12 members. They were an instant hit that helped spread the Korean wave internationally, eventually becoming the best-selling K-pop group of this decade. Despite all of that, throughout the years, three members sued SM for human rights infringements, complaining about being overworked, underpaid, and mistreated. Members of idol groups have been reported to collapse during performances, have 18-hour workdays, and be forced to stay on near-anorexic diets. The slave contracts that idols have to sign when they first become trainees, which for many is in their early teens, allow companies to control every aspect of their lives for 7 to 14 years. And good luck with getting a court case hearing for human rights infringements unless you're in the top group. This kind of control and abuse has led to tragedy. In December of 2017, 27-year-old Kim Jong-un, the lead singer of another SM group called SHINee, was found to have killed himself by carbon monoxide poisoning. After a suicide note was released, it was found that the pressures of the industry and the stigma around seeking help for mental health were reasons the singer said he couldn't live any longer. And this wasn't the first suicide from the Korean entertainment industry. Every few years, there's another case that's brought up to media attention, which is discussed for a little bit and then tossed aside. This is what happened with Jung Jae-yeon's suicide in 2009. Jae-yeon was an actress in her 20s that appeared on a widely acclaimed TV show called Boys Over Flowers. And at the peak of her career, she killed herself. In a 7-page letter that she left behind, she claimed that her agent had regularly beaten her and forced her to have sex with a string of VIPs, including directors, media executives, and CEOs.
Thing, but I wouldn't be surprised if a lot of other idols feel that way, especially like Hyuna. She's been in this industry for over 10 years, and she's been here since she was like 14. She's seen some shit, I'm pretty sure.
Sure, everyone freaked out for a little while, but nothing really changed. And then this happened.
K-pop mega group Big Bang Seungri and singer Jung Jun-young appeared before police today for questioning. The former over suspicion of violating the country's prostitution law, and the latter over secretly filming and sharing sex videos of women. They have both been interrogated as suspects at this time.
The band Big Bang had more sales than the Backstreet Boys or Jackson 5. They were what set off the Hallyu, or Korean wave, in international audiences that brought K-pop outside of the country. And suddenly in March, we found out that Seungri, the cute maknae of the band, was in the midst of a prostitution ring, where he convinced VIPs to invest into his club, called the Burning Sun, in return for sexual favors. But the scandal is much bigger than a star going off the rails. YG, the company signed on with, was suspected of getting rid of evidence. Police seemed to be in on what was going on in the club because video footage is seen of them silencing victims of sexual assault. And government officials and other stars have been found on group chats with Seungri discussing the escorting services and sending footage of them having sex, filmed without the girl's consent. Jang Jae-yoon's case was issued to be reopened by President Moon Jae-in following the buildup of evidence in Seungri's case. More information is coming out every day about the Burning Sun incident. Each time, it keeps on pointing to the fact that this type of behavior is being perpetrated by those in power. The ones who suffer often don't get the justice they want because of the status and privilege of male idols and CEOs in Korea. It took a while, but what started off as an investigation into an assault case at a club might be what changes the unhealthy norms and expectations of the industry as a whole. Because although K-pop has a great opportunity right now with the media coverage it's getting to broaden its audience, the underlying issues need to change in order for it to be globally recognized as a valid genre that experiments with music and artistry, instead of people's final impression of K-pop being from an over-the-top video of some guy doing crazy horse dances. And with that, I'd like to thank you for delving into the world of K-pop with me. I hope to see you again on next week's episode of Around the World in 90 Songs. Get your mirror.